Wednesday, September 18th. Good afternoon. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt, and you are listening to Studio 2, the best live conversation in Philadelphia. No cap.
No
cap. No cap. And I'm using a little Gen Z slang because we're talking. Isn't that Gen Z slang?
I think so. Yeah.
Or am I sus?
Ooh, that's, I know, that's, that is Gen Z slang. Gen Z slang right
we're
there.
Talking about Gen Z today. By the way, Gen Zers age 12 to 27 approximately. Mm-hmm. And among many interesting things about this generation is the fact that there has been a real decline in alcohol consumption, smoking, and sex among members of Gen Z.
No,
and
we wanted to.
Exactly. Well, less of it. Less, and okay. We wanted to talk about it today, not in judgment, but because we wanted to understand what's behind this phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of experts with us in the second and third segments today. And our big question for you, the audience, what does the decline in sex and alcohol consumption tell us about Gen Z? Is it progress or is it a sign of social isolation? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org.
I find it so fascinating because, you know, back in the day,
folks around us, not me personally,
but like, you know, there was drinking, there was, you know, a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
And they're more like, they're about their business. So, but there's probably reasons for that. That's why we have the experts.
Good vague phrasing there, because we don't want to go too deep down that particular path. Mm-hmm. So studio2@whyy.org is the email. The number is 888-477-9499. And if you're a member of Gen Z, you got kids Gen Z, grandkids Gen Z, we really do want to hear from you this hour. But first, we have a trail of local news stories and a very serious one to start off, Jerry. Yeah. I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, a 61-year-old man was found dead in a Philadelphia jail facility on Saturday morning. It's the second death in about a week on State Road. And authorities say Michael McKinnis was being housed in an unstaffed unit of the Curran Fromhold Correctional Facility in Northeast Philly. A supervisor noted that he was there. He was okay Friday night, but by Saturday morning, when staff came to serve him breakfast, McKinnis was unresponsive. He was pronounced dead in that jail cell. No word yet on his cause of death, but his family has a lot of questions. They want to know what happened in the 8+ hours that he was left unattended. They claim that he had some medical issues after he was hit by a car several years ago. But this death further highlights staffing shortages at the prisons, right? A week before his death, as I mentioned, another person was found dead. This person, 31-year-old woman, who is suspected to have died of drug-related causes. She had been brought in by police during a sweep in Kensington. Mm. She was also found by staff bringing breakfast to individuals in an intake unit just days after being taken into custody and following a night of being left unsupervised. And so, Avi, this raises a lot of questions staffing shortages and how they may have contributed to these deaths.
And as we've mentioned before on the show, a federal judge has ordered the city to pay $25 million because of problems with the jails and being out of compliance with a prior order. So we are hopefully going to do an entire show about this topic soon, perhaps even next week.
Yeah.
And if you have thoughts on this, please email studio2@whyy.org. We do seem to be approaching, if we have not already reached, a crisis point in Philadelphia's jails.
Yes.
And we want to talk about it in an open forum. So studio2@whyy.org if you have thoughts on that topic. And now let's turn to a story that affects us here, actually, at WHYY. Mm-hmm. So the Inquirer wrote today about a big plan to revamp Philly's Old City Historic District. It's led by the Independence Historical Trust. This is like a master plan. Full disclosure, Cherry, at the top, the Independence Historical Trust is chaired by WHYY CEO Bill Morazzo, and WHYY's physical building would be in the footprint of this plan. But let me tell you a little bit about it. So it has many parts. Of course, it's not like it's all going to happen, but this would include new signage in the historic district. Maybe even holograms. Mm. I'm not exactly sure how holograms would be involved. But I think more essentially, the plan calls for more green space and greater pedestrian connectivity through the whole historic area. So that potentially means narrower streets for cars, larger walkways, bigger plazas, And I will note that this is all happening in very close proximity to the new park that will cap I-95 and the Chinatown stitch that will cap part of I-676. So if you think about it in totality, we're talking about a whole reworking of like the eastern side of Center City to the river. It's a part of the city where lots and lots of tourists visit, but there have been complaints over the years that it's not easy to navigate on foot or bike. And so this plan could potentially address this over many, many years.
It's so interesting to me because Philadelphia is undergoing this total transformation right now.
Yeah.
You see, we've talked about the waterfront. Hopefully one day we'll do a waterfront show because there's so much construction going on down there.
A ton.
So many changes happening. Since the 15 years since I've lived in the city of Philadelphia. So, I mean, we're dealing with the pains of that I-95 cap, some of the traffic along Columbus Boulevard. But think about what this city could look like in about 10 years.
And
I'm just like, oh, my goodness.
And speaking of that, we have been told by the anti-arena folks that Mayor Sherelle Parker may make a decision on the Sixers arena today or announce
a
decision later in the afternoon.
And that's so another transformation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
so,
possibly.
And this is all happening pretty close to each other, right? The stitch, the cap, the arena, the historic district. So this is a fertile time in terms of reimagining this particular part of Philadelphia. And like I said, it's a part of Philadelphia where even if you don't go there a lot,
it's a
big part of the way we present ourselves to the world. So it affects everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's going to be where we work. So again, this is another opportunity for WHYY and us to be the center of the universe.
You know, we keep getting closer to the center.
Exactly.
Someday we might just be running this whole thing.
You never know. You never know. So we're going to have a little bit of fun here. This is stuff. Avi's getting all like excited right now. I can see him.
Oh gosh.
Philadelphia was a category on Jeopardy last night.
Mm-hmm.
And Avi, you brought this to our attention because you are our resident trivia expert. So we're going to have this fun right now. And to be clear, and I'm going to ask you some questions, right? And you didn't watch the show last night.
I did not see Jeopardy last night. I just know there was a Philadelphia category.
But you made a wager today.
I did. I came
Tell
into
us
the
wager. Let's get it on the record right now.
Okay. So I bet the whole Studio 2 crew that I could get every single question in this category right.
Well, we
have the song. Should we play the song?
We're going to play it. We're going to play it in a second.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And if I get even one question wrong, I'm going to buy everyone in the Studio 2 team lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But if I sweep the category, if I get every question right, what will you give me?
Well, you'll get free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I will personally get Avi some swag that says something grand like Trivia King.
Mm.
Maybe even a crown. Get you a crown, brother. Like, might even get you a crown.
All right.
Or something that says Emperor of Trivia.
Oh, I like that.
Or something like that. We'll find something really cool to do for you.
So swag is on the line and lunch.
Swag and lunch, man.
Okay, I'm ready. I feel ready.
All right. Want to start in the 200 category? We want to work our way up?
Yeah, let's start.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, the question is this.
Mm-hmm.
The Phillies' old home Baker Bowl had an RF wall just 280 feet from the plate, helping Chuck Klein set a league record. 43 of these took place in 1929.
What are home runs?
That is correct. I didn't even get a chance to trigger the thing. Okay, let's move on. Max Tavern in Old City was co-founded by Caitlin Olson and Rob McElhaney, who hang out at a different bar on this TV show.
What is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Oh, you got it. Okay. Architect.
Easy.
Architect Julian Abele couldn't have known his steps at the Philadelphia Museum of Art would one day bear this character's name. This is, oh my God.
Oh, that's easy. Who is Rocky?
Oh my gosh. 800.
I hope people got this right on Jeopardy.
Philly is not just the city of brotherly love. It's the city of this guy from Center City and his band's, quote, special sauce.
Who is, oh, this is a tough one. I think, who is G-Love?
Oh, you got it right. Okay, oh my goodness. For the $1,000
question, it's getting harder. In 2023,
my brother Travis and I, This is someone else reading this. In 2023, my brother Travis and I had our first of what I can only assume will be many Billboard number one hits with Fairy Tale of Philadelphia, including the line, "You promised me this famous street was, quote, waiting for me."
Okay, so the original song, it's a cover of a song, and they say Broadway was waiting for me. But I think in the version that you are talking about, he says, I'll do it in form of a question. What is Broad Street?
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Avi nailed it.
Wow.
Dang, now I got to find you a crown, man.
I'm hungry.
What's going on?
I'm hungry.
And you get lunch. And Avi likes lunch, people. Avi
likes
here's
the
lunch.
Song. This is it. Oh, wow.
Wow.
God, I was so nervous. I have to be honest. I was so, so nervous.
But you nailed it.
I nailed
it. You nailed
it. Swept the category.
Yes, you did. And coming up next, what does the drop in sex and smoking tobacco among Gen Z tell us about their lifestyle? We'll be right back. This is Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I only have like two or three friends that vape.
We have friends who will smoke weed, like constantly, like Lake and Bakers.
Someone that I interact with and see either vapes or drinks.
No motivation, depression. Like, I mean, I haven't had much experience with any of it myself.
The vaping, like nicotine and stuff, a lot of people are switching to, like, you know, the pouches, which I guess is, like, less vaping.
It depends on your social circle, too, I feel like. Like, if your friends are more likely to smoke weed, then, like, everyone kind of does it. Yeah.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron Googling, what's the most expensive lunch in Philadelphia? You just heard some voices there from young folks at Temple University. And Cherry, of course, I have to ask you, what were you like as a teen in college? Did you party a lot in your younger years? What can you divulge here for
us? Well, I can tell you that my philosophy was study hard, party harder.
Okay, I think
but
we have our answer.
But I studied really hard.
The implications of that on the other end are fascinating. Mm-hmm. But that is the stereotype of young people. Mm-hmm. They're wild. They're drinking. They're smoking. They're having sex. And surveys over the years, to some degree, have shown that young people do engage in lots of risky behavior. But what's interesting is that that seems to be changing.
Yeah.
Gen Z seems to be behaving a little bit differently. Binge drinking less, smoking less, having less sex. So what's behind all of this? Is it good news or does it point to other problems in the lives of young people?
And we have two guests with us in studio to help shed some light on these changes. We have Liliana Fan, behavioral scientist and assistant professor at Drexel University. We also have Jen Pollitt, a sexuality educator and assistant professor in gender, sexuality, and women's studies at Temple University, who goes by Dr. J. Welcome to Studio 2. And our question for you is, what does the decline in sex and alcohol consumption tell us about Gen Z? Is this progress or is this a sign of something more worrisome like social isolation? You can email us at studio2@whyy.org or call 888-477-9499.
I had a whole question lined up, but we have a caller, Nancy, from Philadelphia on the line, and I'm just going to let Nancy kick us off. All I know about Nancy is that Nancy is Gen X, and so I'm very curious what Nancy has to say. Nancy, you are starting our whole conversation this hour on Studio 2. What do you got for us?
Hi. I just wanted to say, being Gen X, we were pretty much, you know, left to our own devices most of the time, latchkey kids. Bored, and it was really before, you know, everybody was hyper scheduling their kids into activities and actually paying attention to their interests, and you know, very hands-on parenting was a thing. And I think as a mom of two, well, they're Gen Alpha, but still, I see my friends that they were much more involved in their kids' after-school time and schedules and interest-based play. And they actually paid attention to them. And I think that really informs how kids see themselves and spend their time. And I think that, the young, you know, millennials and Gen Xers kind of can feel more self-assured, and they don't need to have these outward things to fill them up. Like we did, left to our own devices for doing whatever we wanted.
That is a great table setter. Thanks so much, Nancy from Philadelphia.
Okay.
So let me actually turn that over to you, Liliana Fan. So that's an explanation potentially for what we're seeing. But first, let's explain what we're seeing in the data when it comes to alcohol, when it comes to other types of drugs, smoking. What is the data generally telling us about Gen X?
I really like Nancy's perspective and thinking about it a little bit, and also thinking through what the data are telling us. So what we see is with alcohol use over the last two decades, we've seen substantial and sustained reduction in alcohol use among youth and young adults. I do think that it's a little bit more complicated, and we do need to have more research to better understand maybe the potential reasons why. So maybe it is that perhaps Gen Zers are more health conscious, thinking about other ways to protect their mental health, for example, or it could be that maybe they're engaging in other types of substances or tobacco products and other types of things on the market.
So it's about a two-decade decline, you said?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty long window of decline. So something's likely happening. Is it just alcohol use sort of in general? Is it the percentage of total abstainers has changed? Is it the percentage of people who drink heavily has changed? Are all of those indicators changing at once? Can you maybe drill down a little deeper there?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So the number of abstainers has actually increased over time. What we do see that's interesting, though, among those who youth and young adults who are still drinking, they are also engaging in other types of use of other products. So, for example, commercial tobacco use, so potentially vaping or cigarettes or cigars or nicotine pouches, or with cannabis. So really starting to understand among those individuals who are still drinking, what are their patterns of use? Is it binge drinking? Is it regular drinking? And the potential of poly use with other substances, which is concerning because it raises the harms and health effects related to those products.
Very interesting data there. I want to ask you, Dr. Jay, over here, let's talk about Gen Z. Let's define the generation. Who are they? And just give us some characteristics just of how they grew up so that people can understand like the world in which they came up in.
Yeah, absolutely. So something that I've noticed in my classrooms, I've been teaching for over 10 years now, and I am no longer as closely generationally related to my students as I once was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've noticed that truly in the last few years, I am sitting with my students in a classroom of true digital natives. So Gen Z does not know or does not know well a world before the internet and technology. And I really appreciate everything that Lil just said because it clicked in my brain. If alcohol use has decreased over the last 20 years, right? In the last 20 years, we've also seen digital technology, social media, a lot more internet use. So I'm wondering if it's just also a function of people are spending more time in virtual spaces than physical spaces. And so are they drinking less and having less sex because of that? So Gen Z on the older side is late 20s, on the younger side, late teens. And then, of course, we've got Gen Alpha coming up next, who truly will not know a world before the internet.
Can I ask you actually, Lil, on that point? So on the surface, right, alcohol is bad for you, right? It just straight up is. However, it's often often enjoyed in social settings. And so if alcohol use is declining, I think a lot of people are wondering, does that mean young people are just spending less physical time together? What do you think about that? What do we know and what do we still need to learn about that?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So I think that it's not necessarily, well, this is post-pandemic, right? So the pandemic, when we were in the height of the pandemic, it might have been a little bit different. But now that we're emerging and spending more time together, I do think that young adults are still spending that physical time together, but maybe that social context of drinking is a little bit different. Maybe they're engaging in other types of tobacco products. For instance, we do a lot of work with cigarillos, particularly among Black youth and young adults.
Mm-hmm. And cigarillos, can you define that?
Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Cigarillos are, it's a type of cigar product, and it's packaged and sold as 1 to 3. It's typically cheaper, so it's unfortunately accessible. It comes in flavors, and sometimes some of the brands that you'll see on the market is Backwoods, Swisher Sweets, and so forth. And then sometimes they're smoked as they're packaged, and sometimes they're gutted and used with cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
So we see in our research that actually a lot of young adults are using cigarillos or other types of products when they're socializing. So maybe, you know, for older generations, maybe that socialization involved alcohol use, mm-hmm. but maybe now it involves these other newer products or different types of products.
Very interesting. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the decline in sex and alcohol consumption among Gen Zers. And we want to get your thoughts. What are you seeing? If you're a member of the Gen Z group, call us. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And our big question is this decline progress, or is it a sign of something more worrisome like social isolation? I want to bring in a caller. We have Tammy from Montgomery, New Jersey, who's a mom. Tammy, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Thanks for having me. I don't have a question. I just wanted to comment. I have. I was listening to the first caller. She was talking about how some, you know, our the parents of Gen Z spend extra time with their kids, which we did. She's an only child, so she was the center of all, you know, of our world. But she herself was very driven to be successful from like a very young age. And that carried through to middle school, high school, college, and even today as she's searching for a job. So, and I mean, she had access to the internet from the time she was born. We just didn't indulge in that as much until she got into middle school. So I'm wondering, I mean, for her anyway, I don't know. I mean, she was isolated in 2019 and 20,
mm-hmm.
but she found a way to, you know, have some social life with her friends during FaceTime and that sort of thing. So I don't know. I mean, it was just a thought that maybe success is what's driving them to do less of the partying.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tammy, for that comment. My question for you, Dr. J, is sort of, is there philosophical differences among Gen Zers that maybe you didn't see among millennials or Gen Xers that sort of can kind of explain a little bit of the shift in this era of self-control, I would say. It's like more self-control.
I love the way you put that. So I think that the biggest thing is because of the internet, they just have so much more access to information, right? And so it's not, I love this quote from a masculinities researcher. Childhood used to be a series of revealed secrets. But now, since we have the internet, there aren't as many secrets, or those secrets are being revealed sooner.
Mm.
So it's not that every part or piece of information they're getting on the internet is good information, but they at least kind of know where to look for stuff. So I think partly they're coming in with more baseline knowledge, and there are things that we can talk about how to, you know, create a stronger foundation so that they are able to recognize and have more media literacy.
Yeah.
So I think that that's part of it. And so it's setting them up for, you know, level 201 conversations instead of 101 conversations.
And give us an example.
Sure. So I think also like living in a post-Me Too world now,
mm-hmm.
right? So there are more conversations happening around consent than there have been, in more nuanced, some reduced ways, but more nuanced and complex ways. So when I used to teach about consent way back when, you know, over a decade ago, it was, oh, well, girls shouldn't get sexually assaulted. And now there's, you know, the other half of the conversation also, like, boys and young men shouldn't sexually assault anyone. And so I've seen that change on college campuses nationwide in terms of what programmatically folks are offering for orientation, right? The messaging being much more gender inclusive. And so they're coming in already talking about consent in ways that are less fraught, less awkward, and being able to ask and communicate like their needs and wants to partners. That being said, I think because post Me Too, a lot of Gen Z came of age during that time, is still coming of age. And so sex has become really complicated. and really fraught because it's like, oh my goodness, like I don't want to hurt anybody unintentionally. How do I know if I have their consent? Is it just enthusiastic verbal consent? What happens if they say yes to something, but they don't really want to be doing this? How do I know that they're saying yes and they really want to say yes? And so I think there's also this sense or feeling like I just can't participate in this. It's too complicated and too complex. And then you add the fall of Roe, where you have many more young women, certainly that are, you know, potentially would be engaging in heterosexual sex, worried about, you know, pregnancy and not having access to the, you know, full their full reproductive and sexual health care. So I think there's a lot that Gen Z is experiencing in the wake of these two huge, you know, major socio-political moments.
A lot of awareness going on that maybe when, you know, past generations just were a little more naive in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Patrick from Philadelphia says, I think we're being alienated from our peers because we mostly communicate on social media. That's Patrick's take. And I take it from that phrasing that Patrick's a member of Gen Z. Let's bring in another caller who has a question. This is Richie from Port Richmond. I remember Richie. Richie was on the show recently.
Oh, hey,
had
Richie.
A very good call recently. So we're bringing you back, Richie, for part two. You're on Studio 2. What's your question, Richie?
Well, dare I bring up the big C word, but it seems like capitalism intensified and around the time that my parents, I'm turning 27 very soon, so I'm at the very end of this generation. But even for me, you know, through all the jobs I've had, you know, in crew type positions and all these different things, it's the same pattern that you're describing where people will be like, well, everybody that used to work here just used to party it up real hard. We'd get off and all go to the bar and tear it up. And now it seems like nobody wants to do anything. Well, I've noticed mostly that I think that my question is there a more effective transfer of sort of lived experience from our parents to this generation in so much as are we all learning so much about the potential risks and the potential bad and compared with that, are the people who are having kids in the United States since 1900 to now becoming more and more socioeconomically successful, and that's who's having kids, and so those are the people that are going to cultivate the shame around being sinful and debaucherous.
We're going wide there.
Richie,
wow.
Richie just brought it all in.
But Richie, the first part of that, though, was I think kind of what Dr. J was talking about. We have more information, and Dr. J, I'm going to get to you in a second, but I want to bring Lil back into in conversation. Because there is a question here when we talk about a change in alcohol consumption, smoking. Is awareness, public messaging, part of what's going on? People are being told, don't drink, don't, you know, smoke a pack a day, and they're, no pun intended, imbibing that message and acting on it. Is that part of what's going on here?
It is part of what's going on when you think about, for example, declines in cigarette smoking in the United States.
Right.
Public education messaging has been extremely effective in terms of preventing cigarette smoking. But now the message is, though, for current Gen Zers and some of our research that we found is that they know that cigarette smoking is bad. But we don't talk about these other products, and the tobacco market landscape has really evolved. So, for example, I know during at Temple University yesterday, somebody mentioned nicotine pouches. So these newer products are...
I don't even know what a nicotine pouch
is,
and I'll be honest.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, please explain.
Yes, so a nicotine pouch is a newer product that entered, has been on the market since 2016. And so it is a smokeless nicotine product where the nicotine comes in a packet, and it comes in different doses and different flavors. So what you do in terms of using it is you pack it right between your lip and your gum, and the nicotine gets absorbed.
Kind of like kind of like old school smokeless tobacco.
But you're not getting the bad smoke in your lungs.
You're not getting the tobacco, but you're getting the nicotine, which comes with a whole host of potential health effects and different consequences. In terms of public education messaging, yes, it is effective with other multi-level public health strategies. But we also need to evolve the public education messaging to the newer things that Gen Zers are experiencing.
Dr. J, I know you wanted to weigh in on what Richie from Port Richmond had to say.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. Some of the more recent research bears out that the more socioeconomically stable you are or higher socioeconomic status, the less sex you're having and the less children you're having. Mm. We don't totally understand all of that yet, but we can definitely have a conversation about capitalism. But one of the other things I wanted to point out, too, is I think that there's been a lot of public messaging about the sex recession, specifically for younger generations, painting it as like, oh my gosh, we're all doomed, or there's something really, really wrong right. with Gen Z. And I think that there's always a both and here. So I think we can be curious about it and wonder, like, what part of this is related to mental health, depression, anxiety, social isolation, you know, living in a post-Me Too world where now conversations about the potential for sexual violence and harm are increased. But I also think that there might be something really wonderful going on here in some ways where younger people are having less bad sex. So they feel more comfortable to opt out of a system that maybe wasn't working for them, like hookup culture.
Yeah.
And so I think because we have more attention paid because of public health messaging and other messaging through media about consent, about pleasure, about desire, about reimagining, you know, what sex could be and mean for you. There's a great study of sexual citizenship called the Shift Study out of Columbia a number of years ago, asking young people to identify their sexual projects. Like, what is sex for? Are you looking for emotional intimacy and closeness? Are you looking for physical intimacy? Are you looking to achieve and get better and practice? Are you looking for personal exploration? So I think that the more we have these kinds of conversations, younger folks are absorbing those messages and thinking about, well, sex doesn't just have to be this one thing, look this one way, and this is how you do it and what you get out of it.
Yeah, there's an empowerment component to this.
Yeah, so I'm curious about whether or not they're also just having less bad sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about the sex generally, because what does the data say about the sex? I mean, how is it, and I hate to, I'm calling it the sex.
It's accurate, yeah.
But what's the difference between the generations? Can you give us some perspective on how much less sex is happening among Gen Zers?
Yeah, so it is pretty significant, the delay or onset of first sexual experience or sexual debut, formerly known as virginity. Yeah. So when young people have their first sexual debut, it's also important to note that Gen Z and younger...
That's moved back, by the way, you're just saying.
Yes, right. It's happening later in life.
Significantly so.
So, yeah, by like a couple to a few years, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so something else to recognize is, as a sex researcher, this is something that comes up a lot. How are we defining sex and sexual behavior? You know, historically in the literature, it's been defined as penile vaginal intercourse
right.
and heterosexual. And if you're only asking questions like, did you have sex, but you're associating it with penetration, you're leaving out huge swaths of different sexual behaviors, cyber sex and virtual sex. You're discounting the queer sex that's non-penetrative that folks are having. You know, Gen Z, tons of data is now coming out about all of the different ways that they're identifying in terms of gender and sexual orientation. So when we ask, like, how much sex are you having? When are you having sex? Unless we're also contextualizing and operationalizing that word sex, we're not capturing necessarily the entire picture.
That's interesting. We're getting ready to go to break in about a minute. But when you look at the data, is there something that you pick out in there that says to me, this is hopeful? And is there anything else you pick out in there that says this seems troubling to me? Just maybe a quick snapshot and we can dive in deeper in the next segment.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is hopeful, again, is that folks feel less peer pressure to engage in sex
right.
before they're ready to do that. So that's my optimistic approach. On the pessimistic side, I think that we also have to talk about the interaction of developing sexuality in puberty with psychotropic medication, so antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication. This was something that was not necessarily on my radar when I first started teaching, but I teach a course on sexuality and disability where we talk about mental health. And it was staggering to me how many young people reported just anecdotally in my courses that they were on psychotropic medication and they'd been on it for a long time. And this is not to stigmatize mental health care and medication.
But it's just another issue.
But I think that no one is putting these pieces together or looking, again, more holistically and comprehensively.
Yep.
Like, all right, so great, I want you to have your depression, anxiety, OCD treated. But students are saying, like, yeah, no one talked to me about the impact that would have on my desire or my sexual functioning, my ability to achieve orgasm, you know, my ability.
It never occurred to me either. That's a great thing to bring up.
That's a great thing to bring up.
So that's Dr. J, Jen Pollitt, educator, assistant professor at Temple University. We've also been talking with Liliana Phan, behavioral scientist and assistant professor at Drexel. And our big topic this hour is about the decline in sex and alcohol consumption among members of Gen Z. What does this tell us? Is it progress? A sign of something worrisome? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or call 888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I myself have no qualms surrounding sex, and I'm very sex positive, and all my friends usually end up coming to me to talk to about it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my friends haven't had sex yet, and like, that's chill.
I mean, I guess it depends on the person. I'm a gay man. It's nothing like I would think of like years ago where you have to be in an interpersonal relationship. It's more like just another outleash. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Definitely. I'm in a relationship now, and our sex is pretty okay. But like before I was in a relationship, like I would go to house shows and like punk shows, and I'd end up getting really drunk and hooking up with someone. It's just a release.
And welcome back. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This is Studio 2. And you just heard voices from students at Temple University. Today, we're talking about youth and vices, decline in drinking, vaping, and sex. Liliana Phan is a behavioral scientist and assistant professor at Drexel University. And Jennifer Pollitt, a.k.a. Dr. J, is a sexuality educator and assistant professor in gender, sexuality, and women's studies at Temple University.
And of course, as always, we want to hear from you. Are you a parent of a Gen Z child? Have you seen these trends? Are you a Gen Zer yourself? What does the decline in sex and alcohol consumption tell you? Is it a sign of progress or a sign of something more worrisome? The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And as I put that out there to the world, I will bring in another caller. This is Nabu on line 10, who is a Gen Zer and wants to share her experience. You're on Studio 2. Welcome.
Greetings. Thank you for having me. I would like to say that there's a decline in toxic consumption because young people feel more control of our thoughts and emotions when we're sober. Mm. Gen Z is not choosing to take back we're just choosing to take back our minds. We want peace and clarity, not inner chaos and confusions. And I disagree that we're turning to alternative substances. I just think that we're slowly walking away from it all. I remember Frank Ocean's mom in Be Yourself. And she was like, you know, when kids go to college, they get hooked on drugs, marijuana, and alcohol, and to stop trying to be someone else. And that we become weed heads. When we become weed heads, we become sluggish and lazy and unconcerned. And I think Richie was right. Like, a lot of us have seen our loved ones get hooked on drugs or die from illnesses that could be avoided if they were sober. To me, America has normalized addiction from hypersexuality, social media, sugar, cannabis, and alcohol. I mean, to take it even further, Gen Z isn't even really drinking coffee anymore. We're leaning towards matcha and chai tea. Gen Z is very aware of our body and how it responds to what we put in it. And it's also very expensive to keep up with buying vapes and cocktails.
That's true.
Like, on a Friday night, I want to go to a dinner party with my friends after a sound bowl class. Like,
that's
like,
amazing.
Gen Z's idea we have to be self-induced dizzy to hang out. Like, we're choosing to host hiking events and camping retreats. Jazz clubs are reemerging. We're going to yoga, Pilates.
Okay.
This is good stuff.
Just like, you know, garden clubs and farmers markets. We're meditating. There was like a big push for mental health and therapy a few years ago.
Yep.
And we've realized that the change really happens from within.
Quick question for you, Nabu. Quick follow-up. I mean, the sex part. What are some of the reasons why folks your age are declining to engage in sexual activity or less sexual activity?
I think you've made a good point about like hookup culture. I think we're redefining sexual liberation by choosing abstinence. Like, it just doesn't feel right to have some boy fly you out, sleep with you, and send you home. Like, we want commitment. We want effort. We don't want to be the girl you call at midnight, you know? And I feel like they fed us the sexual empowerment movement, but really, like, we can advertise like you're free to do whatever you please, but deep down inside, when you're like at home by yourself looking in the mirror, like it just doesn't feel good. Wow. And then on the other side, like men are also choosing sexual discipline, and there's like this new thing going on called semen retention. We're just approaching things from a more spiritual point of view. Like, I just want to protect my own energy. Men want to even protect their own energy. We don't want to have to intermingle.
Mm, wow.
I think after sex and after we let go of drugs, I think phones are next.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we've talked about that on past episodes.
Nabu, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is fast. I mean, when you first of all react to Nabu, because Dr. J, you're hearing this, you're nodding along with what Nabu is saying, a lot more disciplined. And it's like more of an empowerment choice to be more disciplined. Yeah.
And we have to realize, too, with everything, there's a pendulum swing. So right after we come from the Victorian era, then we have the flappers, then we have, you know, prohibition, then we have sexual revolution. Then, you know, sex becomes...
It's not linear.
It's not linear. Yeah. But I think that, first of all, this is why Gen Z gives me, like, so much hope. Like, I was not that articulate. Right? Well, I didn't have those full-fledged thoughts.
Yeah, Nabu might just be special, by the way.
Next level.
But what I'll connect with there, I think that what I pull out of Nabu's conversation is the power of choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a sexuality educator, and so often abstinence-only sex ed gets a bad rap. And the reason it gets a bad rap is because it's saying that anyone who doesn't choose abstinence should be ashamed and stigmatized.
Yep.
Right? But what Nabu's saying is, like, abstinence is one of many choices you can make.
Yep.
And whenever abstinence is a choice, that's a great choice for people to make. So whether you're choosing to engage sexually or not is less relevant than your ability in an environment that creates the space for you to have the ability to choose that.
And Cindy, who's a mother of a Gen Z high schooler, wrote in and says it is seen as cool to abstain. Mm-hmm. And that might not have been the case in, you know, your Fast Times at Ridgemont High style high school experience.
Yeah.
But can I, Lil,
can
I want...
Oh, yeah, can cool. I say yeah. one last thing? I think that the really important piece of this conversation that I want to make sure we talk about mm-hmm. is... So, young people may be having less partnered sex, but they are masturbating, they're having virtual sex, cyber mm-hmm. sex, they're interacting with digital porn. And so again,
they're still
highly
sexual.
We have an email on that, actually. Yeah. This is Don, who says, just sort of speculating, a possibility as to why kids, quote, aren't socializing as much in the internet age as the ubiquity of internet porn and improvement in sex toys over the last 15 years.
Mm.
So Don is maybe sort of having the same potential
More
explanation
choices.
There. But Lil, I want to ask you about sort of like gender breakdown and all this data. Like, we're talking about all these trends. We're talking about Gen Z writ large. Well, there's many, you can break down a generation in many different ways demographically. Are we seeing these trends show up more in young men, in young women, in people of different ethnic groups? I mean, can you take us inside that and give us a sense of whether this is sort of being felt evenly among different members of Gen Z?
Sure. So typically we see that the prevalence of tobacco use across different products is higher for young men. But also what is contextualizing or driving a lot of the prevalence rates that we do see is driven by tobacco industry marketing mm-hmm. and the culture that they're developing around these products or what it means to use these products. And so that's where we start to see the tobacco use disparities across different groups. So for e-cigarettes, we do see that Asian Americans have the second highest prevalence among U.S. young adults, the highest prevalence among white young adults. And then for cigars, which I mentioned earlier, across the three different types of cigar products, for cigarillos and little filtered cigars, we see that black young adults in particular have the highest prevalence, which is really driven by when you think about the types of advertising that we see. And it's not just exposure, it's the type of messaging and content that's within those advertising and marketing messages that they send to us.
Can you give us an example? Or, I mean, maybe it doesn't have to be an exact commercial mm-hmm. or something, but like when you say targeted, what are you kind of referring to there?
Sure. Like, so, you know, the appeal of using these products in concerts and even sponsoring concerts, changing our social norms around these, the industry. And also when you think about messaging, there was a study that came out a few years ago that looked at the types of content within ads for cigarillos in Black communities versus white communities. And it was even the way that harm was communicated. So for cigarillos and little filter cigars, it was they targeted more or focused on kind of the sensory experience, all the positive stuff that could potentially come or be perceived from the product versus focusing on just the product alone.
Mm.
So it's the amount of exposure and the type of content.
Very interesting. And we're talking about the decline in sex and alcohol consumption among Gen Zers. What does this say about this generation? Is this a sign of progress or a sign of something more worrisome like social isolation? We want to hear from you. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And we have a caller on the line, Brielle, who says, this is a positive change in behavior. Brielle, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, guys. I just have a comment. I'm a little older than a Gen Z, but I wanted to give a positive reinforcement and give them credit for the, like, the standard they're setting. You know, this is a positive conversation. Therapy is becoming normalized. Boundaries are cool now. And I also think, like, with social media, our explore pages will feed us what we are interested in. So if we're making positive and healthy choices, then we're going to see that reinforced on social media. And that's also going to allow, you know, us to create empowering connections, whether that's online or in real time. So this is a very exciting conversation.
Thank you,
Brielle,
so much.
Thanks,
Brielle,
so much for the call. And by the way, if you want to join us, 888-477-9499. So I guess I'll be the wet blanket now, because we do see, obviously, there's a lot of positivity in what we're seeing. But I do, when I have conversations with people my age and older, the concern I hear is that there is basically a crisis of connection. Mm-hmm. People are not hanging out in the same physical spaces. They are not and that explains why they're drinking less, why they're having less sex, and that we need to make sure that people have the basic social experience that sort of binds the human race together and always has. I mean, Dr. J, is there a concern for you that young people are just not spending enough time physically together?
So I'll say this. It was really interesting and sweet. I mean, I love teaching. I love being in a classroom. And part of what I love is that I learn just as much from my students as hopefully they learn from me. But even 10 or 11 years ago, when I was teaching a human sexuality class, you know, there was a lot of flirting. You could tell who had a crush on who. Mm. Suddenly, you know, who was waiting for the other to, like, mm-hmm. leave class or meet up before class and chat. So kind of all that, you know, unofficial socializing. And then, I mean, it was like watching a light switch go off during pandemic times, right, for all of us. Mm-hmm. But when we reemerged back into a physical classroom, right, we were all told public health messaging for good reason. Don't touch anyone. Don't get too close. Mm-hmm. And so really, like, developmentally, I think that there was some stunting of emotional and social development in those ways. And also, like, how to just interact,
yeah.
like how to go back to normal without feeling like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to get you sick or I don't want to kill you.
Yeah.
And so I do think that what I've seen more now kind of post-pandemic is my students are looking for and craving community, a sense of belonging and connection. You know, I often ask them, what's your favorite thing about being Gen Z and what's your least favorite thing about being Gen Z? And the answer is exactly the same.
Which
is? In both columns, technology.
Wow.
And so I have all these friends on TikTok and on Instagram, but I don't have any friends to go, like, grab a cup of coffee with, or I don't have enough, or, you know, I really don't have a tether.
But my question is then, if that's the case, what do we do about it? Because I don't know from a public policy perspective how you solve for I don't have friends to go grab a cup of coffee with. And maybe that's fine for a lot of people. For me, that sounds like torment, but maybe that's fine. I don't know.
Or will it fix itself?
Self-correct, I guess.
Yeah. And so, again, I think part of this is self-correcting, as, right, we just are more back in the world. And, you know, I mean, the jury's out on technology and digital nativism and emerging AI, right? Like, we evolve as a species. Mm-hmm. And so this is like the next possible evolution. And so are we finding connection and meaningful connection elsewhere, right? Digging into the loneliness epidemic research and how, you know, realistic is that, or what parts are we still missing? There's just so much we don't know because we've never lived in a world quite like this in this particular way because of technology before. But I can say that I don't have those casual interactions as often that I see show up in my classrooms. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that makes my heart hurt. But by the end of the semester, they've got it back.
And I want to read a couple more comments as we get ready to wrap up. We have Bradley who says, it's because we are more poor than the generations that came before us. Matt from Delaware says, the kids don't have any money.
Sure.
And Richie and brought that up. Drinks are expensive. And so as we get ready to wrap up, Lil, I want you to comment and just say, I mean, there's a lot of things that Gen Z has going on for them. What things do you say, yay, Gen Z, and what things do you worry most about?
First of all, I am so proud of the last two callers, and I really appreciate them sharing their voices because this is about Gen Zers, and it's their voice that matters, especially leaning into this idea that maybe this generation is more health conscious, taking more control of themselves and what is important to them. I think this is a really good and important time for us to continue with the momentum, figuring out, right, maybe they're getting together at a yoga class or whatever other things that they're doing to protect their mental health. And this is just an important time for us to really continue that momentum. And so I think that is just phenomenal. And then areas where I worry about that I think a lot of our work needs to focus on is really just figuring out what types of new products are in the mix and working towards preventing and reducing that.
So that was the voice of Liliana Phan, tobacco-related health disparities behavioral scientist and assistant professor at Drexel. Thanks so much for the time, Lil.
Thank you for having me.
And you also heard this hour from Jen Pollitt, sexuality educator and assistant professor in gender, sexuality, and women's studies at Temple University. Dr. J, thanks for the time.
Thank you all.
Yeah, and thanks to all our callers and folks who commented today. And that is it for Studio 2. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Besser, and Andreas Copes. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Al Banks engineered today's show from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm hungry for lunch. I'm Avi Wolf.
You get that free lunch.
Thanks for joining us. We will talk with you tomorrow.